Hello, and welcome to the Legal Marketing 2.0 podcast. I am your host, Guy Alvarez, with Good to Be Social. And today we're going to be talking about Restructure This, how to create a podcast that helps you to promote your practice. Our guest today is Justin Bernbrock. Justin is a partner in the Sheppard Mullins Chicago office, and he is the head of the Chicago Complex Restructuring Team. Justin has worked on some of the most complex Chapter 11 cases in the world over the last 11 years. Prior to joining Sheppard Mullin, Justin was a partner at Kirkland & Ellis in Chicago. And then before his legal career, Justin served with distinction in the United States Navy. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thank you, Guy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. So before we get started on the topic, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Like, how did you go from serving in the Navy to being a restructuring lawyer?
I spent 10 years in the Navy, and 10 years is the sort of interesting mark in service, because a lot of folks think that if you do any longer than 10 years, you might as well do 20 and clip the retirement check, or, you know, follow on career after that 20-year period. And so the 10-year mark is like the deciding point. And I decided that I wanted to go to law school at that point, and that's what I did. I went to law school at the University of Illinois College of Law, and I had no interest in bankruptcy or restructuring, but I did have an affinity for some of the moot court practicum offerings at the College of Law, and a buddy of mine suggested that we should sign up for the bankruptcy moot court competition, because that was the only competition at the school where if you succeeded in the internal round, if you were one of the top three participants in the internal round in the fall, in the spring of that same year, you could travel to New York and compete at the Duperstein bankruptcy competition. So this was the only competition that provided an opportunity to travel outside of Champaign-Urbana to compete at moot court competition. So that was the one we did. I grew very fond of bankruptcy and restructuring through that process. I was fortunate enough to advance onto that national team where we placed third at the Duberstein competition, and that was the best the school had ever done. And it was just a years-long immersion into bankruptcy practice, which largely what I credit to developing the interest that I have in bankruptcy and restructuring. I should also say that experience introduced me to the three bankruptcy faculty at the University of Illinois, professors Charles Tabb, Bob Lawless, and Ralph Brubaker, all of whom are titans in the bankruptcy scholarship universe. And they had a big impact on my interest in the practice area, and ultimately it's what led me to seek a job at Kirkland & Ellis, which is where I started my legal career after law school.
That is fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your practice in general, and maybe talk a little bit about why did you decide to create a podcast for your practice?
Sure. So I think Kirkland has a well-known restructuring group. In fact, I am very comfortable saying that Kirkland's restructuring practice is the best in the world. And the matters and cases on which they represent clients and advise are the most complex in the world. And largely, the practice at Kirkland is debtor or company side, where they represent the actual would-be Chapter 11 debtor or the entity that needs to undergo an out-of-court restructuring. Because in any restructuring matter, there are a whole host of parties and positions such that lots of law firms become involved in these situations. The larger the company, the more complex it is, the more roles there are in any given situation. In my experience, you know, looking backwards, is probably 80% company side and 20% other, which usually means creditors, purchasers, shareholders, board members, other participants in that process who aren't center stage, so to speak. And when I moved to Sheppard Mullin in April of 2020, the idea was build upon an existing platform that is already a well-established law firm, having started in California in 1927. The firm expanded nationally to the year 2000. And as part of that growth, began to establish a bankruptcy practice. And what they hadn't had, certainly until I got to the firm, was someone with as much company side, you know, debtor side, large cap restructuring experience. Mm-hmm. And part of the goal of the firm and my goal as well with the firm is to grow a prominent restructuring practice that can do company side work, that can do creditor side work, really an all-purpose, all-weather practice. The idea for podcast came because I live outside of the city of Chicago, about 45 miles as the crow flies, south-southwest of the city, in a little town called Frankfort. I like to say that I can hit cornfields with a 9-iron. And I'm at the southernmost edge of the Chicagoland area. And so I take a train into the city, and I like to listen to podcasts on that train ride. And I think that my experience commuting into Chicago is not dissimilar from those who commute from Westchester or from Connecticut into New York City, others that commute into Chicago, folks that drive into San Francisco from the surrounding Bay Area, or even in Los Angeles, which even if your commute is a mile and a half, it might take you an hour and a half.
Yep.
And so this idea of listening to podcasts or, you know, audiobooks, I thought was something that I was interested in it in the first instance. And people who are my vintage probably consume information in a similar way, given the popularity of podcasts. So I went looking for a complex restructuring podcast. And there are a handful of bankruptcy-related podcasts, and they're put out by great organizations, the American Bankruptcy Institute being one of them, as well as others who have put out podcasts from time to time. What I found about those was the breadth of information covered in those podcasts covered really the whole spectrum of the bankruptcy world and, again, a unique component of bankruptcy. And I think it's a fascinating aspect for any bankruptcy judge. In a single day in a bankruptcy courtroom, the court can be hearing cases of individuals who, you know, are plagued by significant medical bills that have caused them to seek relief in the bankruptcy system. And in the very next minute, the court can be hearing the United Airlines case or any other large, complex bankruptcy case. So it's this really unique intersection of, call it Main Street and Wall Street, that present in the bankruptcy court. However, when you think about a podcast that covers, quote unquote, bankruptcy, one day they could be covering consumer issues. The next day it could be Chapter 9 issues like the city of Detroit's bankruptcy. And then, you know, a follow-on episode could be about a Chapter 11 issue.
Right.
I was really focused on those Chapter 11 situations and the, we'll call, complex restructuring situations. And I just didn't find a podcast that had that. So I think, which is probably true for most things, that if you want something and you can't find that thing, then you should try to create that thing. And so that's what we did. And that's really the genesis of the podcast.
I love it. And so once you decided you wanted to create a podcast, What were your next steps? What did you do to get it organized? You know, how did you interact with your firm? Like, what happened after you said, okay, this is something that I want to do?
The very first thing that my team and I sat down to do was create a white paper that we could use to sell the idea internally, and also that we could use an organizational or formational document. So not only would it contain that which we needed to persuade folks within the firm of the idea, but that once that approval was granted, we could look back to that paper and say, okay, now that we've gotten the approval, now we need to execute on the following steps. So it was a substantive sales pitch.
Interesting.
And I mean, that does tend to make a sales pitch longer. And of course, you can account for that by developing an executive summary, which really covers the entire breadth of the document. But having that substance there, there was something for me that it was persuasive that we knew exactly what steps we were going to take once we got the approval from the firm. And that was exactly what happened. And that's what we did. We were approved by the firm. We got the required equipment. We began to engage with guests. Our show is largely an interview model. And we began to line up guests and work with the fine folks at Good to Be Social for pre and post production needs. And I think we also wanted to focus heavily on how we were going to market the podcast out to the broader audience through social media, through direct advertising of the podcast. And essentially, we just put that plan into action.
Do you want to start a successful podcast that will generate leads for your law firm? At Good to Be Social, we work with many different law firms and help them to produce and promote their podcasts. Podcasts today are more popular than ever. In fact, today's internet users routinely use podcasts on a monthly, weekly, or even daily basis to stay informed and be entertained. As this medium continues to grow, law firms don't want to fall behind and need to move beyond traditional written content and onto the digital airwaves. Unfortunately, when it comes to podcasting, many legal marketers aren't sure about where to start. With our latest ebook, The Law Firm Guide to Podcasting, readers can learn how to choose a format, a topic, and a name that will get you noticed, how to select and reach out to potential guests, the technology and the recording basis you know to produce a successful show, as well as how to measure the success of your podcast. So hurry now, go to the Good to Be Social website and look for the Law Firm Guide to Podcasting ebook.
So it looks like you've done about 21 episodes so far, and I'd love to hear what has been the reaction, both inside the firm as well as with your clients and your prospects.
Yeah, it's really been neat. I have been very surprised by the success of the podcast. And, you know, internally, folks are big fans of the podcast. I know a number of our subscribers are folks within the firm who historically just haven't had that much insight into the world of complex restructuring and have found it really interesting. I think outside the firm, you know, I hear from folks pretty regularly that listen to it and that really enjoy the content that we're publishing. And I can't say offhand that someone has called and affirmatively said, I heard your name because of this podcast, and I'm calling with a restructuring situation, you know, solely because of the podcast. And that's never been the goal of a podcast in any event. It is merely one component of a broader go-to-market strategy. And I think a big component of the driving motivation behind the podcast, which, you know, something I experienced when I first got to the firm, is that although the firm has had a bankruptcy practice historically for many years, it isn't a household name in, you know, circles of complex restructuring firms like Kirkland & Ellis, Weil Gotshal, Paul Weiss, Paul Hastings, Davis Polk, Ropes & Gray. I mean, these are firms that have been well-known and well-established in the complex restructuring world. And there are others, and my mention of those is not to the exclusion of any others. I would say that there is, in the world of complex restructuring, a handful of firms that everyone knows are probably going to be involved in the most complex cases, in the situations that are suffering distress. And I had this sense, even kind of coming into the firm, that Sheppard Mullin wasn't quite at that point of being a household name. And so part of, you know, building a group that is more well known for nationwide complex restructuring, I think people have to hear the name. They have to hear the name associated with complex restructuring topics. And so
absolutely.
Yep. A primary goal of the podcast was, you know, to say, my name's Justin Bernbrock. I'm at Sheppard Mullin, and this is the Restructure This podcast. And that would, in time, hopefully start to spread our name. And it was a way to sort of reach a broader audience than, you know, I can't meet 7,000 people when I go to the ABI spring meeting. That would be exhausting. I can't pass out 7,000 business cards at the TMA Distressed Investing Conference. These are great opportunities and great conferences and events at which to meet people and connect and learn. But it is, I mean, just by nature of being one human being, I can't reach that many people if I'm just meeting with them, but I can reach that many people and have reached that many people using a podcast.
I love it. What would you say, Justin, has been the biggest challenge with getting the podcast going and making sure that, you know, you're consistently creating more episodes?
As with all business development endeavors, when times are relatively slow on the billable hour front, it's very easy to keep up and keep pace with business development initiatives and marketing efforts. You know, those, the sort of slower periods of billable work are the times when I think a lot of people and really great ideas emerge, and folks really hit the ground on the business development front because they see the natural response to a slow billable period. And then when the billable period picks up again, the greatest challenge is maintaining pace and maintaining any established expectations that had been created in that period of a lull in the billable work so that things aren't dropping off.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things I typically tell our clients who are considering doing a podcast is podcasts are not only a great opportunity to create content, and as you said, raise awareness of yourself, raise awareness of your practice and of the firm overall. But one of the other things that I have found to be really valuable in doing a podcast is having the ability, by having guests on your podcast, to either strengthen an existing relationship or in some cases, make a new relationship. Have you found that to be the case with your guests?
Yes, in both instances, I think in spades. And I would say that it's also just really interesting to learn about people. People whom you think you may have known or known about, if you talk to them for 45 minutes or an hour, you may learn some really interesting things about them. Yep. I would say that probably our most downloaded episode is my interview with my old boss, Jamie Sprayregan. By the way, great name. Just as out of the gate, great name. But Jamie is seen as being the I think, you know, the godfather or grandfather of the complex restructuring practice. There's been a few folks over the years who have kind of held that title, certainly Harvey Miller at Weil Gotzel. But Jamie is a really, really well-known name in the restructuring world. And having him on and talking with him about how he built the practice at Kirkland & Ellis was really fascinating. And one of the things I learned about him is that he almost didn't go into law and almost decided to pursue a career in exterior house painting, which is fascinating to consider that a guy who has been just really prominent and notable name in the restructuring world almost was, you know, Jamie's paint your house operation. Because, you know, a lot of folks, you know, you've sort of heard or formed in your mind an image of somebody or some organization or institution. And then you talk with them or you hear their personality come through. And it has a really interesting impact. I think that alone has been really fun. And I think that that has probably strengthened relationships with folks who we or I were already connected with. Jamie, of course. Oh, we had Judges Jones and Isger on the podcast. And that was actually an interesting collaboration that we did with the American Bankruptcy Institute, which was a lot of fun. It's always really interesting to hear from judges, and particularly judges who are handling some of the most complex cases in the country. But then we just recently had an episode where we took the lawyer who was representing upwards of 15,000 veterans who had been affected by the earplugs made by the 3M subsidiary that made the sort of foam earplugs that Marines, soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardsmen wear while on duty to protect their ears. And there have been a number of injuries, particularly hearing-related injuries. And there were a lot of lawsuits filed against the 3M subsidiary, which ultimately filed bankruptcy in Indianapolis. And so there was this interesting intersection of multi-district litigation, you know, veterans, a group that I'm very passionate about, and the bankruptcy system. And so absent the podcast, we, you know, wouldn't have learned about this unique intersection and that made that connection. So I think it's really both, you know, in terms of fostering new connections and strengthening old.
All right. Well, Justin, we are almost out of time, and I want to be respectful to you. I'm sure you're a very busy man. But before I let you go, perhaps I could get you to share a little bit of advice to a lawyer who is thinking about starting a podcast, but is not really sure that he's going to have the wherewithal and the time to actually do it. What would you say to someone who's a lawyer who's thinking about it? What advice would you give them?
In terms of the time commitment, if you can have help in doing the heavy lifting up front, such that you create a process, the actual time commitment week over week is significantly reduced once you have established, and I think this is true with most things, you know, there is a substantial investment of time on the front end. But once you figure out what your ideal schedule is, how you're going to identify guests and start forming what your typical episode script is going to look like such that you get into a plug and play model. If that is, and I guess this works mostly with doing sort of an interview type podcast, I think that you can actually reduce your time burden by just doing more of that up front. If your podcast is one where it's simply you talking for a lengthy period, that's going to require more time and energy, particularly in the research that has to go into that. I will say that one of the reasons why I favor interviewing experts in other fields or in fields that touch and impact the restructuring world is that I needn't be the expert in that case. I simply need to know enough to have the conversation with the person, and that helps on the time commitment. We try to keep our episodes at or below 45 minutes. I think that anything more than that, it becomes burdensome for somebody to listen to something that's, I mean, there's some really great podcasts out there. I mean, Lex Fridman is remarkable, but I had trouble listening to 3-hour podcast. I'm sure it's fascinating, but it's tough. It's tough. So doing the work on the front end, keeping the episodes short and deferring to experts outside yourself are the three main pieces of advice I would give.
Excellent. All right, Justin. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Really enjoyed learning more about yourself, your practice, and certainly your podcast. To our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode and you want to make sure you don't miss any future episodes, please go to goodtobesocial.com/podcast. You can subscribe there. You can also check out some of our great past episodes. Justin, again, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure meeting you, and it's been a pleasure listening to you. We wish you all the best with your practice and with your podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you guys very much. And thank you to the team at Good to Be Social. You have been a huge, huge help in launching and maintaining our podcast. And for that, we're very grateful.
Excellent. All right. Thank you very much. And thank you for our listeners. We'll see you next time.